Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability with acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she has helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love. Tonight, Josephine will be discussing finding our inner guidance in nature.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. I always look forward to Thursdays. It truly brings me joy to be here with you, discussing these wonderful topics that help us all learn and grow. And it helps me, too, because teaching is one of those steps on the path to wisdom. And if any of you would like to write in any time or call during the show, we always love to hear from you, your questions or your comments. And we really like to know the wisdoms that you've gained from your own experiences or any of your experiences that you've had of psychic ability. So please feel free. We'd love to hear from you. And I always like to begin our show with a spiritual agreement. And this was a gift to us from my teacher and mentor, Jana Massey. And it goes like this. And I ask you all to make it with me, if you will. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Great.
Josephine, we have two questions that came in from last week. Would now be a good time to look at them?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Great. Excellent. Okay, well, the first is from David in Los Osos, who writes, "What if a lot of different things bring us joy? Which way do we go?"
Oh, thank you, Tony. And, you know, I think that probably before I answer David's question, I should just give a little brief recap of last week. I think it'll just make it easier for all of our listeners who didn't catch last week's show to follow along. And last week's show was about staying in our joy, because when we're in our joy, we are on track with our purpose. And, you know, as our joy is our deepest yearning, it's that what we really would love to do, it's what thrills us, it's what really makes us deeply, you know, pleased or happy or delighted. It's more like delight, I think. And, you know, sometimes when we're in childhood, we get glimpses of this. And the stories that I told last week were all about this. They were about learning how to stay in our joy and about how sometimes we do get a little image from childhood, a little window that opens up and lets us see what our purpose will be as adults. And so it's a good idea to do remembering, to remember our childhood, to remember times when we really felt our personal power and could stand strongly in it. And, you know, this is very, very ancient wisdom. This is the wisdom of know thyself, which was written in the over the city gates in stone in the ancient city of Delphi long, long ago, and has been a wise teaching throughout many different spiritual thoughts and spiritual ideas. So taking the time to know who we are is a really good idea. And then one of the lessons that I learned that I spoke about last week in some detail is how dampening down our joy doesn't serve anyone. How our joy is really, it's our job to bring our joy forth. It's what the universe feeds on. And so we need to bring our joy into the world. And that joy can include that sort of sense of yearning sometimes or that thrill. And we also spoke about how it's more like happiness and pleasure can be externally sourced, like if we go up in a Ferris wheel or something, that's an external source of happiness or pleasure, and that joy and delight are a little more internal. They kind of well up from within us. So even though something may be going on in our environment that might not be particularly pleasant, we can still hold on to our joy because that's what we're all about. That's our deep inner self. So now, to answer David's question about having many different things that bring us joy, I like to say, do them all.
Mm.
You know, at first I was a gardener in my early career, and then I became an activist, and it all contributed to who I am now. I mean, all the different stages, whatever we do, a student, however it is, we learn and we grow from those things, and they all add in to who we are. And so even if you don't feel that you are in your purpose, actually you are. We are always in our purpose. And it doesn't have to be complicated. I love this one story that Peace Pilgrim, who's one of my very favorite mentors, tells. She wrote a beautiful book. It's titled Peace Pilgrim, her life and work in her own words. It was a collection of stories gathered by her friends. And she walked her pilgrimage in 1953. She started at the Rose Parade and walked till she died in 1984. And her pilgrimage was for peace. It was a prayer for peace, and it was definitely a purpose that she was called to. She was called to be a pilgrim and to just take to the road with no support whatsoever and no funding and nothing that she carried, no money, and she just went and carried her message for peace. And she spoke all over the nation with and also Canada and Mexico, and was invited onto radio programs and talked at universities and in church groups and things, all about the importance of peace. And one of the many stories that she tells was about purpose, and it was about this woman who had, she just didn't know what her purpose was. She was kind of at odds with it. And so Peace Pilgrim said, well, what do you love? And she said, well, I love to swim, but she wasn't good enough to be a swimming instructor or anything, but she did love it. And she loved to do flower arranging. She loved flowers and placing them and making beautiful bouquets. And she also loved playing the old show tunes on the piano. And so it was clear that she couldn't make her livelihood from swimming. And she wasn't really good enough on the piano either to be a music instructor. But she was good enough at flower arranging to get a job in a flower shop and work her way up from the early stages into the more advanced work of doing the flower arranging. And swimming became her exercise. And then she went down to the old folks' home on the weekends and played those show tunes that she loved so much for them. And that way she fulfilled and created a very beautiful life full of purpose. You know, her gift to community was the music that she played, and the swimming became her exercise, and the flower arranging became her livelihood.
Ah, Josephine, that's a wonderful story.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Really, really nice. There's something you just said, though, which really struck a chord with me, and I want to go back to it. It was in answer to David's question. You said that we are always in our purpose. So I wanted to ask, what's happening then if we feel disconnected from our purpose?
Yes. Well, sometimes I think when we are feeling that disconnection from our purpose, that is that can be an urging to change direction, which is also a necessary step. I mean, there have been times where I've had, you know, something happen where I could no longer do what I was doing and was enjoying, and I might have felt, you know, frustrated at the time, like, oh, gosh, I really wanted to do that. But then as I begin to make a change and turn and go into a new direction, I find that that is actually even more closely aligned with my purpose. So that's an example of where we think we're on our purpose, but something comes up and we can't do that anymore, so we have to take a new direction, and then we find we're in our purpose again. And the same holds true for something where you feel completely disconnected from your purpose. And but that can include that, you know, sort of pressure or that yearning to move away from that and to go into another direction. So I love that little saying that I showed last week. This was a little haiku poem that I wrote, and it goes like this. Our feet are always falling steadfastly on our path before us. So I feel that that's really true, regardless of whatever it is that we find ourselves doing. And the image that I had with that haiku poem was of I was warm and snuggly in hiking boots and warm pants, and I was walking in the snow, and I saw the next 3 footprints extending out in front of me. And not any more than that, just the next 3. And I think that's often the case. We're not really always given the long-distance view. We might just know the next few steps to take. Some people are given the long-distance view. Some people know what they're going to do with their life as soon as they come in. I think this is especially true with artists. Some people come in with that artistic yearning or talent or music, and they just know and they go for it. And that's great, too. They maybe do have the long-distance view, but I didn't. And, you know, just the next step for me, like starting off as a student, then moving into being a gardener and an activist, like I mentioned. And early on, you know, I even had this experience when I was first becoming a medical intuitive of what I would call, and what I do call, crossing over, where I would begin to feel the pains of other people, that I, especially if I was standing near them, like in line in a grocery store. And that was a very uncomfortable feeling, but it was part of what moved me into my purpose. So it didn't feel like it was purpose, but it was a part. It was a part of my learning how to manage the energies that I was experiencing.
So you're saying then that if we're actually feeling disconnected from our purpose, like, you know, not sure what we're doing, where we're going, or whatever, that in itself is just part of the journey.
I think so.
And it's what it's calling to us, that we need to change or do something different.
Yeah, you know, it's like that one book that's titled Pain, the Gift That Nobody Wants.
Mm.
You know, sometimes there are things that come in our lives that help us, specifically help us with our growth. And so, you know, I think that the angst that I felt as an activist was a part of getting me to yearn towards my, part of getting me to move towards my purpose as a medical intuitive, which later came out. And also, too, the yearning that I had to know what is my purpose. I knew it wasn't this and it wasn't that, but I wanted to know what it was. That's a part of our purpose, too, because that gives us that drive to move ahead, to find what it is that we're seeking in our lives, the expression that we're trying to come up with. And sometimes that can take a whole lifetime, you know, of searching and looking. We finally find it in the last years of our lives. Oh, that's what it was all about. That's okay. We're always in our purpose. Everything that we do is a part of our purpose, even when it includes the struggle to follow our inner calling. And that's a learning in itself, the importance of following it. Everything, all of it, leads to our greater growth and learning. It's all our purpose.
So, Josephine, before you go on, I do have one more question for you. And it's about something that you said last week, the Dr. Otto story. And you talked about purpose and livelihood. And the way I heard it, it was as if the two things were connected. And I wanted to ask you about that, in the peace story with the woman finding her livelihood through the florist with the flower arranging. Is our purpose always connected with our livelihood?
Well, it can be, just like the story you were just talking about, the flower arranging. But it doesn't necessarily need to be. So perhaps you remember I also said that you know, in the example, you definitely need to write the novel, you know, if that's your purpose and you feel called to write. But you may want to keep the day job. Perhaps our purpose is in being a mom or a dad, in parenting, which might also include the income from the job. Or our purpose may be just the pursuit of the income itself. Some of us come in here to, you know, live a life like that, to have that experience as well, to really excel in financial gain or support. And it's the way that I look at it is all the many ways of God coming to know God.
Oh, that's really profound. Talking of something, you know, about the livelihood thing, it's making me, it's reminding me that I once read a book by John Paul Getty, and probably people know who he was. I think he was the richest man in the world at one point. And in this book, it was called How to Be Rich. I remember towards the end of the book, he started reflecting back on his life and how successful he'd been in attaining his goal, which was to make money. And coming to the conclusion that what he didn't have because of that was closeness to people. And it had come at a terrible price. And at the end, with all this money, there's not much you can do with it when the people that you should be close to in life are no longer there because you just pursued this, you know, this one thing. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, yeah, I think that can really be true. And perhaps the people who are, you know, working on this aspect of divinity that are here, I think maybe they're here trying to do both. It sounds like John Paul Getty got a very clear picture at the end of his life about the truth of his purpose. And you know, he'll probably come into his next lifetime with a really keen yearning to do just that, to really excel at relationships.
So would you say in a case like that, when a person gets to that vantage point and they look back and it feels like with a sense of regret or something, that maybe they mistook their purpose? Or how would you characterize that?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, it could be that they mistook their purpose and missed it, Or it could be that their purpose was actually just coming to really understand and value the importance of our true unique service in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be either one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that brings us to another point, which is that it's especially important to not do, if we can, in our lives, what other people think we should. Unless it is that we similarly feel that same calling from within ourselves. So, you know, Getty, he may have suffered from this illusion, thinking that earning, you know, a huge fortune was the goal in life. You know, it could be an idea that was implanted in his mind by others, you know, and certainly our commercial television, advertising, movies, all of that glorify wealth for the self, not necessarily wealth for others. And so sometimes we can get ideas from our culture or from our family about what we should and shouldn't do in life. And as well-intentioned as other people may be, their primary concern, if they are our parents especially, is typically for our safety. And, you know, they've been really invested in trying to keep us alive ever since we were born, and they really want to keep us around. And I love this one story that Ram Dass tells. He said that when he was growing up, his parents made it abundantly clear to him that they wanted him to be well-educated and to achieve and to be responsible and to stay really healthy and to be successful and to bring pride to them. And then if he had first accomplished all of this, then he should also be happy. And, you know, of course, this is not a recipe for an authentic life well lived. You know, this is a life lived according to the plans of others. And Frank and I have a friend whose parents wanted him to be a dentist. And his father was especially invested in him being a dentist. His father said, well, I'm a dentist and your grandfather was a dentist. And, you know, you need to be a dentist too. It's a good income. It's a wonderful way to support a family. It's good work. But our friend just like totally couldn't stand the idea of looking into anybody else's mouth. It just, you know, it was something he just didn't want to do, and he didn't like dentists. He didn't like going to the dentist. He liked his father. He loved his father, of course, but felt all this pressure about that. And so it was really clear that that was not a good direction for him to go in. And gladly, he didn't. He pursued a whole other avenue where his mind was very keen and excelled in the career of his choice. So that's a really wonderful thing. I'm so glad that he didn't do that.
Mm.
And then there's a woman named Bronnie Ware, who she's an Australian nurse, and she worked in palliative care for the dying. And she recorded her patients' epiphanies during the last 12 weeks of their lives. And she wrote a wonderful book that she self-published initially, and then it got picked up by Hay House a couple of years ago. And her book was called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. And, you know, it's probably no surprise that the number one deathbed regret among those people that she spoke with was, I wish I had had the courage, you know, to live a life true to myself rather than a life that others expected of me. That's such an important point.
I know. I mean, I feel that in my own life. Sometimes what we believe at these, the expectations of other people, you know, within our family in particular, and sometimes our close friends as well, it's a very powerful force, and it can be quite difficult to resist that.
Yeah.
Did you have any suggestions there?
Well, you know, it does take that courage to just stand up. And, you know, I've heard stories of people, you know, getting out of town or disappearing just to be able to free themselves to live their own life, because I think sometimes the pressure on young people is immense. And, you know, the parents don't realize, I think, sometimes how much pressure they are putting on their children to try to do lives that they really sincerely, and it's all because they love them, of course, but they really sincerely feel that they need to do this or that or the other thing. And really, we do have to be free to make our own mistakes and find our own way and, you know, bump up into problems and turn another direction and bumble along. And sometimes it's true, we don't make it. But we have to be able to have that freedom in order to begin to find our way. And that does take some courage. You know, I don't think that any one of my family members would have approved at all if they knew what I was doing as I was beginning to become a medical intuitive. And the little bit that I shared with them quickly showed me that they didn't approve of it, that I really should go another direction, and that it was dangerous and risky and a bad idea.
And do you think sometimes, Josephine, that perhaps we imagine that we will provoke the disapproval of others,
yes,
when in fact, you know, just because of something that happened a long time ago,
yeah,
and maybe that time has passed.
Yeah, I think that's very true, Tony.
And I think I've done that myself, you know. I've imagined that someone would be
disapproving,
yeah, of something, and then when it's come to it, no, pleased you did that.
Yeah.
I remember,
yeah,
once when I was, what, 20? I think I was 19, 20. I shaved all my hair off.
Did you?
These days, it's, people do it all the time, but back then it looked very strange. It looked like you'd either been having sort of radiation treatment, or perhaps you were some kind of skinhead or something. It was very odd. And I was convinced my father really disapproved of this when I came home. But I found out from a friend of mine that he was secretly quite pleased. He said, not many people would do that. So there you go. You can make lots of mistakes regarding,
yeah,
what you think, you know, your
other
significant others will approve or disapprove of.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the questions from last week. We had a second one, if you remember, which I was forgetting about.
Oh,
and
yes,
the second one was anonymous. And the listener asked, what if we feel we should suffer to fulfill our life's purpose? Does this mean we are getting something wrong? For example, the struggling artist who never has enough money to pay rent.
Ah, yes. We do have, you know, often cultural beliefs in suffering. And sometimes that's based in theological ideologies. And I'd just like to mention that because it's good to be aware of it, you know, some of that early subconscious mind programming. And so it's always a good idea to have some sort of a replacement thought ready. Like the one that I love so much is, you know, that used to serve me well, but it no longer serves me now. And instead, I truly know that I am grateful for the fact that my life is full of ease and grace. And so, you know, when we do have that feeling that we should suffer, good idea to think about that, because, you know, that quote that we shared a couple of weeks ago with the subconscious mind topic by Henry Ford, he said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're always right.
Yes.
And so we need to pay attention to what these thoughts are that we have. And if we believe that we have to suffer to fulfill our life's purpose, then we will have to suffer to fulfill our life's purpose. But our subconscious mind is always listening, and it's a dutiful servant, and it's happy to change. It yearns to grow. That's its directive, is to grow, to learn and grow. So if we can have a replacement feeling, and our subconscious mind responds best through those really strong feelings. So when I've used this phrase, you know, that used to serve me well, but it no longer serves me now, I always say it with a kind of a giggle in my heart, because it just is, to me, very amusing to think that I would have these thoughts that are not really something I'd like, but I kind of tend to dwell on them, and how much nicer it is to have something better. Like, you know, I absolutely know and that my life is full of ease and grace, and I'm so grateful for that. And that's a fact. It truly is. I mean, I go to the side of the door and flick a switch and a light comes on,
mm-hmm,
or I, you know, have a warm home that I live in, or whatever it is that, you know, I have a darling husband that I love. We, you know, so many beautiful things to be grateful for. Just arms, you know, that we can pick up things, and hands that move so exquisitely and beautifully. All of our many, many blessings that surround us every day. And in answer to this question, I went ahead and asked Frank to prepare me a little slide. And this is a quote from a Mary Oliver poem, which I absolutely love. Mary Oliver is such an incredible poet. And this poem is called Wild Geese. And maybe you could show that slide for us, Tony.
Certainly.
Thank you. So this one says, and I love this, it's so good. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. And that's so good. I'm going to read it again, because I think that good poetry always deserves to be read twice. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. And that's really the truth of our purpose, you know, of what we, this is what I'm talking about, that yearning. Just let yourself love what you love. Let yourself go into that direction. Stay in your joy. Move in the place, in the direction of that which thrills you no end, that you just really deeply enjoy. And Mary Oliver also asks, and I love this one too. She says, what do you plan to do with your one precious and wild life? Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's sort of like, you know, what we were talking about a little while ago, just, you know, setting ourselves free, having the courage to live our lives, however wild it may be. And so, you know, if we're called to be an artist, we definitely have to be one. But, you know, like I said also earlier, we may have to support our desire with another source of income. And I, you know, I love that word, desire. That's the Latin roots, D-E for D-E-S-I-R-E. D-E means of, and sire means, you know, of the Father or God-inspired. And though I don't personally see divinity as either masculine or feminine, it's the idea of our desire coming from our connection with our own source of divinity that I love. And, you know, that reminds me also, too, a friend recently asked me a question. They said, you know, regarding excitement. And they said, can we mistake our excitement for joy, you know, that adrenaline rush? And in this case, this young man was asking me, he really desired that rush. And, you know, we can almost get addicted to it. It's like fast driving or skydiving or cliff climbing. And sometimes these can definitely be a part of our purpose. I mean, you know, there are race car drivers out there and cliff climbers. But, it, you know, it all points to our purpose, either directly or indirectly. But it's important to note that kind of a rush can also happen to an addict, too. And we need to distinguish the difference between an agitated state of being, which can be fear or excitement, and the deep welling up of joy, which is more about yearning and desire from within. They are two very different things. But they both, either one, will point us to where we need to go, either away from it, like away from the agitation, or toward the joy.
Okay, Josephine. Well, I have a question about that then.
Mm-hmm.
So what if one part of you thinks, oh, this is my purpose, and another part is thinking, no, that's just an escape or an addiction? How do we tell the difference? Sometimes it's really hard to know what we really feel.
Yeah, it can be. So an escape or an addiction is always going to have a feeling of compulsion to it, whereas our purpose or our joy will have a more free and, you know, deeply cherished feel to it. And this leads me right into our topic for today, which we're awfully late getting to. I do apologize. And that's all about finding our inner guidance while we're out in nature. And perhaps with that, Tony, you can show our next slide. And this is really nature's gift to us, the gift of guidance. And this slide is a quote from John Muir. It's one of my favorite quotes. And he says, climb the mountains and get their good tidings. Nature's peace will flow into you as sunshine flows into trees. The winds will blow their own freshness into you and the storms their energy, while cares drop off like autumn leaves. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, it's really beautiful. I mean, I feel soothed just hearing it.
Yeah, it gives me the goosebumps every time I read it. I just love it. I've almost memorized it a time or two, but I read it tonight. So when we go out into nature, we find a kind of a peace, and it really opens us up to the truth of who we are, because we are nature. You know, we are a part of nature. It is our original home. And when we come home, as we do, when we're amongst the trees and the plants with a sky overhead or the soil beneath our feet, we find that we really actually do fit in. And then, you know, while we're outdoors, letting our minds wander, it's kind of like letting a computer run on a problem or a task that we've set it on. We don't even have to think about it. We can just let it percolate, and before we know it, ideas begin to occur to us. We find that we know the very next step to take in life. Our answers to our questions and problems just simply pop into our heads. You know, there was a young woman here at Cal Poly who told me about, she had been at Sonoma State University before she came here to Cal Poly, and she told me this beautiful story about a psychology teacher who I believe is still teaching there, and I wish I knew his name. But he had an assignment that he always did in his classes on campus there, and I don't know if any of you have been to the Sonoma State campus, but it is absolutely exquisitely beautiful. It's like a park. They've got a pond or kind of almost like a small lake in the middle of the campus, and there are ducks and waterfowl that come and roost there or nest there, and there's lawns with beautiful trees. It's just incredible. And so it's a wonderful atmosphere for the students to learn and grow in. And this one professor had as one of his assignments during every course, or during every semester or quarter, I think they're on the semester system, if I'm not mistaken, he would ask them, his students, to think at the beginning of the hour of the class, to think of a question that they had, a really pressing question in their lives, something that had maybe been troubling them for some time, or something that they were really yearning to know the answer to. And he would have them write that down on a piece of paper, on their notebook or whatever, and then he'd have them go out into the nature of the campus, just, you know, right outside the classroom door for just 20 or 30 minutes or so. So they might take 5 to 10 minutes to work on their question, and then they'd have them go outside for the next 20 or 30 minutes and just sit out there somewhere, anything. And he told them not to think about their question because they've already got it written down. They've got it with them. Just look at the birds and the bees and the trees and the water and the sky and the clouds. And, you know, if they felt like strolling and walking, that was okay too, or if they wanted to just sit and rest. And really the idea was just to not really think about much of anything at all. I mean, they could think about stuff if they wanted to, but they didn't need to think about their question. And then they were to come back into the classroom and write the answer to their question. And usually, while they were out there, sitting in nature on the campus, they would get an idea, would just pop into their head about what they needed to do to resolve this pressing question that they had. And then they'd come in and just journal it and write down what they knew, and then that was their class for the day, their psychology class. And I just think that that is such wonderful wisdom. It's just really great. It's a great thing for people to learn how to do. And so what I'd like to do today is to ask each of you to let that be your homework assignment this week, to find some time, any time this week to do this, to just think of something that is really pressing in your life and write it down, and then go out into nature and just sit and walk or whatever you want to do, and let your inner computer run on that, because we do know what we need to do in life. We do know our way. It's a part of who we are. We have this deep inner compass within us that guides us all the time. And then just take a moment to journal it and write down what you receive. So thank you very much for giving that your time this week. That'll be our main exercise for this week. So it's a little homework assignment.
I really look forward to doing that, Josephine.
Yeah.
It's reminding me of something I read in a book. I used to read a lot of books. This one was by the philosopher Nietzsche, and I remember reading in one of his books that he said he didn't trust any thoughts he had sitting down, and he said that his best thoughts always came to him when he was out walking in nature.
Oh, that's really great. Well, with that, perhaps you can show our next slide, which is a beautiful quote from Peace Pilgrim, and it really was the inspiration for this show that we're doing here tonight. And this one says, "Seek it in reflective silence out in nature." And that was a quote from Peace Pilgrim. She had an experience early on in her life before she began her pilgrimage where she had something that was really troubling her, and I don't know what it was, but she just had this deep yearning and this deep desire to know, and she just decided to go out into the woods near her home at night and just walk. She just felt like she needed to walk. It was a full moon, and she walked and walked for hours and hours. And then she said somewhere, you know, in the wee hours, she came upon this little clearing, and she stepped out into the moonlight, and there the light was just pouring down, and she got this feeling of this sort of this scintillization or this, illumination occurring, almost like golden rain or silver rain coming down around her. And we hear about this experience from the saints, you know, and from different religious traditions. We hear about experiences that are similar to this. And so here was this beautiful moment that she had of this illumination in this clearing. And At that right then, she just got the full vision for what she was to do with her life, how she was to go about walking her pilgrimage. And she began her preparation after that. She came home. She knew what she needed to do. She basically, you know, took her various possessions, her home and her things, and put them in the hands of other people and began walking the Appalachian Trail. And I think she also did some other trails around, maybe possibly did the John Muir, I don't know. And then she was ready to begin, like I said, in 1953 with the Rose Parade. She began her pilgrimage for peace. And she said that a pilgrimage is a prayer, and that it was something that, you know, she spent her time walking as if it was in as a prayer, a prayer for peace, thinking of peace for other people and for herself and for everyone. And peace really does begin within us. And when we feel that peace within us, when we really feel it, we can then project that with our telepathy, which is a natural part of our human experience, to all of those in the rest of the world. And so that's just something that I sometimes like to do from time to time, especially if there is unrest in the world, if there's a place where there is war or concerns of war. I'll go ahead and center myself in my own peace inside of myself, and then I'll just allow myself to send that feeling of peace out to others in the world, wherever they may be. And so, anyway, Peace Pilgrim is very near and dear to my heart, in part because of that. And I was born just 2 years after she began her pilgrimage, and sadly I didn't know about her while she was walking her pilgrimage. I would have loved to have gone to hear her, you know, speak at one of the colleges or universities. She even spoke here in San Luis Obispo at Cal Poly at the university here. But the point that I really want to make, and the reason why I tell this story about how Peace Pilgrim got started, is because we do find a clarity when we are on our own out in nature. It's a really great thing for us to do.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. It's really inspiring. We do have a caller from San Luis Obispo on the line. Is it a good time to let them invite
you
on?
Yes, that'd be wonderful.
Okay. Welcome to Step Into Magic.
Hi, Tony, Josephine.
Hello.
Oh, am I online?
Yes, welcome.
Yes. Oh. I just love to listen to Josephine's program. And,
thank you.
A lot of wisdom there. Thank you for doing this.
Yes.
This is Amalia.
Oh, good. Oh, hi, Amalia. How are you tonight?
I'm good.
Good. Well, thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Josephine, I would just like to make a comment about, you know, the topic of what you are teaching tonight. I was very lucky to meet somebody special in the Amazon jungle and spend many years with him. And he wouldn't say this, that for him, this was a native, totally native person from a little tribe of like 80 members maybe. And he hardly spoke in Spanish language, and he was illiterate. He didn't even know his age. But anyway, he will say this about that the biggest book that's out there, it's nature. And it has thousands and thousands of pages for whoever is willing to go deep into silence of their hearts and be able to seek with the eyes of their hearts. It is out there. All the teachings that the stones and the plants and the animals and the fish and the stars can give us, it's out there.
Oh, that is so beautiful, Amalia. My goodness. That's wonderful. Can you tell us a little more about it?
Yes, this was a medicine person that he was one of the wisdom keepers and one of the most amazing wise guys I ever met ever in my life. And as I tell you, you know, he never attended school, and his school was nature. And he learned from the flowers, and he would say, you know, when you're in tune with that energy, when you become the plant, the banana leaves will talk to you, or the rocks will talk to you. You need to be that you know, particular plant to know the medicine, what it will teach you.
That's so beautiful.
With your heart. Yeah.
Oh, that's just wonderful.
I just wanted to comment on this topic. That's very interesting.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. That's just amazing. Thank you so, so very much for calling and sharing in. I love the idea of becoming the plant and then letting it talk to you and to listen with your heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for calling in, Amalia. I really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Goodbye.
For now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, no, well, that was fantastic.
Yes, that was. What a great, great little piece of wisdom and information, and what a wonderful experience she had in the jungle there.
Yeah, and it was, well, listening to that story and listening to, you know, Peace's advice to seek it out in reflective silence in nature,
yeah.
It made me think that today a lot of us seem to be very, very busy. You know, we
yeah.
get up, we rush to get out of the house, to get to work. And
yeah.
I know lots of people are living like this. And when people get home from work, there's often lots of chores to do. And so I'm wondering for some people, whether it's actually very difficult to get out into nature, especially if you live in a big city. I mean, we're very fortunate here on the Central Coast, is that, you know, we have nature everywhere. What do you recommend, Josephine, if someone is, you know, doing a 9-to-5 job and they're commuting to and from work and they're in a busy city? What can that person do?
Oh, that's a great question, Tony. Thanks so much for that. Yeah, you know, I think that, well, we all get our little coffee breaks, of course, and so there's moments that you can, you know, zip outside. I know that one of the things that I do as well, I'm working during my day, and you know, I love my work, and that's great, but I also love to get a little exercise, and so I'll hop on my bike, and I'll just go for a zip around the block. I might have a little half-hour break here or there, and just, you know, riding around under the trees or circling around the park, you know, nature is everywhere. It's all around us. It's just right outside the door, and, you know, you can step out into the great outdoors and get a whole lot of nature just right here, right amongst the city. Of course, much nicer to be able to access something like the deep forests of the Pacific Northwest or the Amazonian jungle, like Amalia was just sharing
mm-hmm.
with us. But we still can get a lot just even gazing out the window. You know, like right now I'm looking at the new persimmon leaves that are just acquiring their full size. You know, they've just come out there, that fresh, bright green. And I also see the little heart-shaped leaves of the red bud that are just starting to break out on the tree. Some of them are just teeny tiny because they haven't grown yet. And some of them are getting bigger. They're about an inch or two in size. And then beyond that is the view of the mountain of beautiful Cerro San Luis and the fog and the clouds and the sky and the crows and the birds. You know, the crows are flying north for the night. There's a lot right there just out the window. And so I think that if you can't find time to get out in nature, you can squeeze in little tiny peeps of nature by just stepping out the back door or gazing out the window and, you know, listening while we're doing that. And so these coffee breaks and things that we have during the day, those are opportunities that we can use to listen within. They can be opportunities for meditation. You know, so often we just take the coffee break and maybe shuffle through some papers or do whatever or go chat with somebody else, and that's all good too. But if we'd like, we can use those as opportunities to take a moment to go within ourselves. Maybe watch for some synchronicities. You know, synchronicities are wonderful opportunities for us to see, you know, patterns and directions in our life. You know, like if there's something that's calling to you and you notice it and then you notice it again, or you maybe even notice it another time, or if somebody mentions the title of a book to you and then somebody else mentions the same title and then somebody else mentions a movie by that same name, you know, that might be a place where you think, maybe I better go in that direction. And so, you know, those are some of the things we can do. And then also, you know, one of the things that I'll do sometimes is, if I'm in a busy, crowded place, like let's say I've gone somewhere and, you know, maybe the weather is a little inclement, maybe it's raining or maybe it's cold and breezy outside, I'll just go sit in the car and just look at the sky or the bushes that are right in front of where the car is parked and notice the little birds in there, or, you know, take a short walk to the city park that's right nearby. There was that wonderful story of that woman who at the end of her life, she was in a rest care home, a nursing home, and she stopped speaking, and she they would just get her dressed and put her in front of a window every day, and she'd just look out the window. And she hadn't spoken something like 3 or 4 years. And a social worker came in, and she sat beside her for a couple of days just to be with her. And at the end of the week when she'd been doing this with her, the woman turned to her and said, "You know, these past 5 years have been the most profound years of my life." And, of course, she was floored because she didn't expect this woman to speak after her long silence. But it just showed that she had this deep, deep experience with gazing into the natural world, because the window they put her in front of had a view of a tree and a little garden below. And, you know, there have been times where I've been nearly moved to tears, weeping, just seeing the beauty of the, you know, flowers and the trees in a city shopping mall. I mean, sometimes it's just so exquisite, the beauty of nature. It just bowls me over. Yeah.
Thank you, Josephine. Actually, we've had a message from Anna, and she writes, "Hi, I just listened to Serge Kohuli King tell the same information about nature. Fascinating. Thank you, Amalia." There's a message for Amalia, I think, there.
That's
about
great.
Her wonderful story.
Wow, that's wonderful. Yeah, well, Serge Kohuli King, another great teacher. I love his book very dearly. It's called Mastering Your Hidden Self, and it's one that I've really pored through and pored over. It's a great, great book, and there is so much that nature can teach us.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, I mean, it seems to speak to the truth of these ideas, that you find them in so many different places, and that different people who've given their lives to exploring these things, where we can receive our guidance and where we can find learning, are saying the same things, so that their experience is pointing them in the same direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking about, you know, being in the city, and I was talking earlier about it being hard at times. I am reminded by what you just said then about looking in the window, that right near where I lived, this is when I lived in England in a biggish city, I was actually living right next to a park. And it was full of birds and squirrels, and it had enormous trees that you could go and sit under or stand under, and there was grass that you could run your hands through. And at night, foxes would be playing in the park. And it's definitely true that, you know, in the city, there are those opportunities. It's just, it can be tempting or easy just to lose sight of that and get caught up in everything else that's going on.
Yeah, so very true. Yeah, stepping outdoors for just a minute, it always helps.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we're out of doors, just gazing or letting our mind wander, you know, maybe a place near your home or whatever, we can slip into that daydream time. And daydreams are really, really fabulous for us. You know, they're very creative times. It's not that a daydream is a lapse of attention. It's really an optimal learning opportunity. You know, we can find that sense of well-being and, you know, even plot the route for our future. Our daydreams can really help us to realize our deepest desires and our strivings, and they can open us up to lots of really great positive emotions that help us to create the lives we'd love to live. So, you know, sometimes I think of our daydreams as little autobiographical planning times, and we can slip into daydreams really easily when we're out relaxing in nature, even, like I said, if it's your own backyard. So that's another little piece of homework that I'd like to recommend to everyone. So if you could give some time to this week, if you can let yourself slip into a daydream, you know, it's really fun and it feels good. And this leads us very nicely into our next slide, Tony. Perhaps you could show that.
Certainly.
And this is a quote from Esther Hicks as she brings forth the energy of Abraham and the messages there. And this one goes, "Whenever you start guiding yourself by caring about how you feel, you start guiding yourself back into your stream of source energy. And that's where your clarity is. That's where your joy is. That's where your flexibility is. And that's where your balance is. That's where your good ideas come from. And that's where all the good stuff is accessed from." Isn't that a great quote?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and so here again, you know, like we were focusing last month on the subconscious mind about really creating with our deep, passionate feelings, with our positive feelings about what we want to create in our life. And then here, you know, letting that be your joy, letting your joy guide you. That's where your clarity is, finding those good feelings. And so when we're out in nature and we have a nice little daydream and let ourselves dream our future life, you know, we are really creating, co-creating with nature our purpose here. It's a great thing for us to do.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the homeworks this week, Josephine.
Very
I love
good.
Daydreaming.
So, you know, it's a really good idea when our lives come together in this way. You know, my grandmother, Noni, she was such a wonderful person, just my British grandmother. And she used to take a walk every day with her husband, Billy, and they'd go out and walk their dog, who was a Great Dane. And they would just, you know, walk arm in arm, and they would look up in nature. They lived up in the hills above Hollywood there. And there were lots of old oak trees and grassy areas, and they'd just take a nice little stroll. And she was a writer, and so as well, whenever she would have a, you know, what they refer to as writer's block, a little, she would just go take a walk. And then she'd come back and clackety-clack, she'd be back at it with her typewriter again. And if you'd like to, if you'll indulge me, I'd love to read a little excerpt from my upcoming book, Step into Magic, and it's about my grandmother, who always turned to nature for inspiration. So I'll just launch right into that. So my grandmother, Noni, lived a charmed life. She spent her days interviewing Hollywood celebrities and her nights going to see their movies. She loved to write and supplied her home country, England, with news of the stars and their latest films. Behind her 1920s Hollywood home, built into the side of a steep little hill, was a writer's studio. When I'd come to visit, she'd be out back clackety-clacking away with two or three fingers on her old Underwood typewriter. She'd be lost in the joy of her craft, having forgotten all sense of time and my imminent arrival. She'd emerge from her studio, happy as a lark, brush back her curls, and greet me with a radiant smile. Then she'd show me the latest photos sent from the studios of her posing with Dustin Hoffman or Meryl Streep, Judi Dench, or Anthony Hopkins. Back in the 1960s, she even got an exclusive interview with the Beatles. All of her stories went off to the London Evening News, the Daily News Chronicle, Outspan, or the Thomas Press, and the checks came back to support her husband, and her children. She absolutely loved her life. It was a life that she had totally created for herself. Originally born to riches, Noni had received training as a girl in the finishing schools of Germany and France. She studied elocution and deportment, flower arranging, and dance. But what she really loved was writing. As a young woman, she met and married my British-Canadian grandfather, who at the time was a captain in the British Naval Reserve. Shortly after they were wed, he contracted a severe case of tuberculosis and was sent to the Arizona desert to die. With two young babies, a chest full of fine linens and some silver candlesticks as her total dowry, my grandmother pitched a tent for her little family. She scratched out an existence among the chola cactus and blistering heat of their new home. My grandfather's complete inability to work left them barely able to get by. But Noni was taken with the beauty of the desert, so she took up what she was born to do and wrote. At first, it was novels of life in the desert, which was a totally foreign and intriguing environment for her readers back in England. Later, she wrote tales from the memories of her childhood growing up amongst the Zulus of South Africa. These books sold well and supplemented their meager war pension. During the height of the summer heat, the family drove their old Model A Ford to Hollywood, where it was still hot and dry enough for Grandpa's lungs, but not quite as blistering as the desert. There they took on part-time work as extras in the budding film industry of the 1920s and 30s. Since my grandfather was one of those rare people who could contentedly spend time relaxing all day long, week in and week out, he soon healed from tuberculosis. So the whole family moved to Los Angeles by the time my father was 11. There, Noni began her career as a reporter. Being based in Hollywood, what her English readers wanted most was news of the stars. So clackety-clack, she kept their voracious appetites filled. Noni loved to write, and write she did, day and night, ebullient with joy. All she ever did was to solve the problems that life presented to her from the perspective of her true delight and passion. In her early years, to help feed her family in the desert, she wrote novels. Later, to satisfy her British editors, she and a group of fellow writers founded the Hollywood Foreign Press. The Golden Globes, so popular today, was their creation. She understood that our problems are our teachers. They present obstacles that help us to reach for new heights of self-expression and urge us to create our true lives. Noni found meaning and purpose by allowing her love of writing to guide her. She traveled the world to interview stars on the sets of movies in distant lands. Her writing sustained her family and inspired her all the way to her dying day at the fine old age of 93. When we follow our calling and bravely step into the truth of our lives, opportunities arise for us that would not arise for anyone else. My grandmother was called to write, as wholly impractical as that may have seemed amidst the squalling babes, rocks, and heat of the desert, write is what she did. One thing led to another, and a beautiful life was formed.
Well, thank you, Josephine. That was really very, very nice.
I'm glad you liked it.
And she certainly did lead a charmed life, didn't she?
She did, and it was all of her own creation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I guess you're saying that we all can if we have the courage to follow the truth of our own joy.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, as a young teenage girl, I would go over to Noni's house and, like I said in the little story there, and she'd greet me, and of course we'd go into the house and we'd make lovely British English breakfast tea, and then we'd go out to the front and sit underneath the New Zealand tea trees that were there and sip our tea and look at the birds and the big trees overhead and the sky flowing by. And she was a big nature lover, and I know that she got most of her inspiration and, you know, a lot of her joy from just participating in life in nature. That's a great thing.
Well, thank you. Shame I never got to meet her. Arrived here too late. Well, that's really a beautiful place maybe to move towards the end of the show, Josephine.
All right.
Because we are running out of time.
Okey-doke.
The link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com. Just go there and click on radio. And if you've enjoyed tonight's show, do please tell your friends. And remember that you can listen to all of our shows anytime. You can subscribe to the podcast and listen to all of the shows with the click of the mouse. Or you can visit the top menu, Radio Archives, and access the link for any show that you'd like to hear. So, Josephine, before we close, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Yes, thank you, Tony, for asking. So we all have to listen inside if we are to find our way. And with that, perhaps you can show our last slide. And this is a quote by Goethe. Magic is believing in yourself. If you can do that, you can make anything happen. So I'd like to thank you all for the gift of your time. And in closing, I'd like to share this little blessing with you. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love, and we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you this evening, and I trust that everyone listening has learned lots about seeking guidance in nature and developing psychic ability. This has been show number PS-2.14, and we look forward to having all of you join us again next week when Josephine will be covering the inner journey of archetypes, myths, and dreams of the self.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so very much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.
Mm-hmm.